Hello, everyone, and welcome to Blissful Living. This is the Queen of Feeling Fabulous, Rochelle Marie Lawson. And boy, do I have a show in store for you. Now, you know, this show is really about reducing or eliminating stress from all aspects of our life as we travel down our path to bliss. And you guys know that. You guys have been listening to me for about 6 years. And I bring a phenomenal amount of different guests on the show because we have a lot of things in our life that can create stress and havoc for us. And the more educated we are about how we can curtail some of that, the better we are able to take that step forward and have a more blissful journey as we travel down a path to bliss, no matter what may come up in our lives. And so today's guest, let me tell you a little bit about, let me pique your curiosity, first of all. How many of you, when you hear the word attorney, you immediately become stressed because it's either, you know, something negative that you've experienced in the past, something negative that you don't want to experience, or you just think, oh my gosh, what now? That word can create an enormous amount of internal stress within us, like the IRS, when you hear the IRS, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. It's just these certain words can create stress within us. But here's the difference with today's guest. She is an attorney, and she's going to bestow information upon you that's going to help you curtail some of that stress. So the next time you hear the word attorney, you might not be so apt to become in a stressful state. You might be more apt to become in a positive state with regards to the words of wisdom that this wonderful guest is going to share with us. And she's taking time out of her busy practice to bestow some words of wisdom that is going to help us move forward more successfully and more positively as we travel down our path to bliss. So let me tell you about her. Her name is Nancy Green, and she started her own law firm in 2013. Now, here's what's so beautiful about Nancy. Nancy understands business, and if any of you out there listening own a business, have tried to be an entrepreneur, work for a business, know people that have a business, or you just do business on your day-to-day engagements, whether you're going to the grocery store, whether you're going to Barnes & Noble's. Business is all around us. And depending on where we are, it could be stressful, it could be uneventful, or it could be very elating and very positive. Now, in April 2016, Nancy joined Land, Carroll & Blair, PC as a principal. Her practice focuses on business litigation, employment law, women-owned businesses, startup businesses, and those businesses in transition from family to legacy business. Now, after more than 20 years as a business lawyer and litigator, Nancy was tired of the heartbreak of business owners who lost everything from mistakes that could have been avoided. She made it her mission to inspire, educate, and empower business owners such as you and I. And Nancy's She's an amazing woman, but she's also an amazing author, and she is an Amazon best-selling author for her participation in eWomen Network, Succeeding Through Doubt, Fear, and Crisis. Now, when Nancy's not practicing law, she does something I love, love, love. She spends time on her horse farm with her husband and her two teenage boys, and she writes fiction. Now, when you envision attorney, especially an attorney that's a litigator, you know, that's like the kick-ass women in the courtroom that don't take no stuff and they bring it hard. When I think of this, I think of Marsha Clark and the O.J. Simpson trial, just because, you know, regardless of the outcome of that trial for her, she owned what she was doing in the courtroom, and she showed up in a phenomenal presence, even though she had a bunch of stuff going on behind the scenes that, you know, could have compelled her or took her off course. She owned that. And so when you think of an attorney and a litigator, you don't think of somebody writing fiction, or maybe you do, but you also don't think of somebody spending time with horses. And horses are so beautiful. I love animals. I love being in nature. It's so grounding and so stress releasing. And so with that being said, I want you to think of Nancy Green as this wonderful attorney that's here to share words of wisdom about how you can operate your business more successfully and avoid going to court and being in litigation. To the wonderful woman, compassionate woman that is spending time with her beautiful horses on her horse farm. And so with that, I'd like to welcome Nancy Green to Blissful Living. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Rochelle. Thank you very much for that wonderful introduction. That was great.
Thank you very much for having
me here talking to your people.
I love it. I mean, you know, it's just, I'm all about helping people to have a more really blissful journey as they travel down their path to bliss. And I tell people all the time, you know, our path's not going to always be paved with gold. We're going to come across potholes, big trees, basically stuff that we need to get over and get through. It may be quicksand. It may be, you know, poop. It may be whatever it is. But it's not going to always be pretty. But if we can learn things that will help us keep moving forward and get around that big tree or, you know, that overgrown foliage or stepping out of that poop or that quicksand, then that's, you know, that's what it's all about, because it's not about the destination. It's about enjoying the journey as you travel to the destination. So I want to ask you, I just want to start off and ask you, and I always like to do this with my guests, when did you know that you were meant to be an attorney, particularly focusing in the area of business law and litigation?
Oh, well, after my first year of law school, decided I was going to be an attorney. I went to law school actually never intending to be a lawyer. I was going to be a forensic psychologist, which at the time I was going to law school, it was a new field of psychology, and people know it from, you know, Silence of the Lambs, which is out at about the time.
The
psychological profiles, that's part of forensic psychology. And the preferred pedigree for that is an advanced degree in psychology and a law degree.
Mm-hmm.
So I got into every law school I applied to, not so much on my psychology programs, which was my undergrad major. And the school I ended up going to is like, okay, we'll make you this special program. There was all of one forensic psychology program in the country at the time.
Wow.
But law school is terrifying and horrible, and you have to survive your first year of it, and then we'll add in your master's psychology courses.
Oh.
And I said, great. And about halfway through the first year of law school, I decided I really loved it and really didn't want to be going into forensic psychology anymore.
Isn't that amazing how what you think you want to do, as you travel on your journey, you realize, I really want to do this over here, so let me indulge and do that. Isn't that funny how that happens?
It is, and it's very much been part and parcel of my life that, you know, setting an intention to go one way but being open enough to the opportunities that actually show up, which is part of the reason why my resume is so disparate.
Well, I mean, I think it just gives you, you know, a wealth of background of information that, you know, you can help those that come to you, and you're able to understand possibly where they're coming from and where they want to go. Even though you didn't go into forensic psychology, you know, because that was an interest of yours, I'm sure you, and, you know, was your undergrad, I'm sure you have some psychological information that helps you to help your clients to move forward. And I know, like, our title of our show today is How to Run a Joy-Filled and Low-Stress Business. Now, I've been in business for over 26 years, and I can tell you that there's been times where it's been super stressful, but there's also been the times where it's been filled with a tremendous amount of joy. And so what I want to just go right into, for those of you listening, it might be a great time for you to, you know, grab a piece of paper and a pen and sit back and relax for a little bit and take some notes, because it's particularly if you're a business owner, entrepreneur, or even if you work for someone, it might help you to understand a little bit about the processes of how you can bring joy into your business and allow the joy to be more prevalent than the stress that the business can bring to you. So What exactly do you mean by joy-filled and low-stress business? What does that mean?
Well, I mean, we all get into business because we're doing something we love, and we tend to forget that. So the part of having a joy-filled and low-stress business is really making sure that our focus stays on doing the things we love, and that means having a back office for the business that is tight, that has the people you need in support positions, that has the policies and contracts, so that the things that most business owners are worrying about, you know, is this client going to pay on their bill? What do I do? There's employees that have, you know, personality conflicts. How do I handle it? The more you've systemized and streamlined that back office function and delegated, right, because that's one of the things that we don't do as business owners as often as we should. I should be out doing the things that bring value to my company, and that's not bookkeeping, right? So by putting those systems in, it allows me to focus on the thing that made me want to do this business and be happy about it. And have that confidence of walking out in the world because I know my systems are tight and we can handle whatever gets thrown at us because stuff's going to get thrown at us. That's the nature of life.
Mm-hmm.
But it really is knowing that you've got your I's dotted, your T's crossed, you know, your S looks like an S instead of a figure eight, those sort of things.
Right. So engage basically is just having, like you said, the back office area of your business prepared, systematized so that you can really go out and do the things that you enjoy doing as a reason why you started the business without having the worry of, you know, something falling apart on the back end that you didn't think about. Particularly, I can share a story with, these two people I know that started a business, and they were all gung-ho, you know, all excited about the business. And as long as everything was going great in the business, they didn't have like a contract, they didn't have a buyer-sell agreement or any of that kind of stuff. They were just two people that indulged in, you know, doing what they love to do or their vision of what, you know. However, when things got a little challenging, that's when the relationship with regards to the business began to sour. And because they didn't have a buy-sell agreement or didn't have some of those things systematized, it actually became kind of nasty. And so, lo and behold, the business ended up halting. They couldn't move forward and make progress. There was no money being made. Because they didn't have the back office systematized, the whole thing collapsed from the foundation. And so I know when you say having that back office in place and having contracts and things in place, you know, I think that really does help people to, when everything's good, everything's good. But when everything's not good, it becomes really nasty. And by having some of those things in place can help those not good times not be so nasty, correct?
Correct, exactly. And that's exactly one of the things that I'm talking about is, you know, we all hop in to business, and some of us start it because it's a hobby, and then it grows into more. But it's really taking that time to set up the rules of the game so that you can weather the storm. I mean, that's the legal landmines that I talk about. Your friends went through one. And because they didn't have a way out, they blew up their business in a bad way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of it continuing and everyone benefiting, it closed its doors. And that's, you know, in my intro when you talk about the heartache of business owners, that's exactly what I was talking about, that we missed a step along the way and now really can't pull ourselves out of the problem.
Yeah, I have another story I could share with regards to that. So he's a very successful entertainer and moved into the city I lived in. And our kids became friends. We became friends. And he shares a story with regard to his business. Now, I'm going to say the entertainer's name, and everybody will know who he is. And he's very, very, very successful back in the day, but he had something that happened. So the entertainer is MC Hammer, and I know him as Stanley Burrell. That's his God-given name by his mom, but his business name or his entertainment name is MC Hammer. And so when I, you know, talked to MC Hammer, when we talked to MC Hammer, you know, we asked him different things. I mean, you know, he became a friend. Our families are close, and the kids grew up together and all that stuff. And he said when he got into performing, he got into doing what he loved. He was an entertainer. He loved to perform. But because he didn't have the nuts and bolts of his business in order like it should have been, you know, he ended up going into bankruptcy. And it was because he didn't have the nuts and bolts of his business in order like it should have been. And when he thought people were taking care of him, they really weren't taking care of him. And there were really like no solid contracts on his end versus the record company and the people that represented him. Of course, they had solid contracts and stuff. But on his end, with regards to him running his business, he forgot entertainment was a business. He got into it because it was fun to do and he loved to entertain. And so when I heard that story, because I looked at him like, how in the hell can you make all this money and be broke? And you know, he said, because what I was doing as a business. I took it as what I was doing when I was trying to get to that point as fun, and I didn't have my back office set up correctly, and I didn't have anything systematized. And then, you know, this is like late 80s, mid 80s, late 80s, you know, early 90s, that he was hugely successful. Now he's gone on and done other things and, you know, still performs and learned from his mistakes. But the words of wisdom he did share was to make sure you take care of your P's and Q's, like you said. And so can you just share with some of the people or some of the listeners out there, can you just share with them, you know, a couple of things that you've seen with regards to entrepreneurs and business owners that they fail to neglect to do, simple little things that they fail to neglect to do that really can protect them on the back end of, you know, maintaining success with their business?
Sure, absolutely. You hit on it with the MC Hammer's story in a large part, which is the single mistake we make in business is in part not treating it as a business, but not having the contracts that we need. So your first example with your friends who went into business together, they didn't have an operating agreement or a buy-sell or a dispute resolution provision. And when bad times happened, they had no choice but to go through what I call a corporate divorce that, you know, destroyed their business. The same thing by not having a contract that was written to protect him with all of the various people. You know, MC Hammer left himself open to having people dissipate his money, having, you know, liabilities put in his name that, despite being hugely successful at the time, they ended up in bankruptcy, because he was focused on the art side and not on the business side. So that's probably the biggest mistake entrepreneurs and business owners make, is they get into these deals sort of on a handshake basis, not realizing how hard it is to prove out a handshake deal, and not using the law and the ability to use a contract in the best way to protect themselves. Because there's a lot of rights and protections you can have in a contract that you won't get any other way.
Oh, so, you know, you hear people say, well, you know, I'm starting this business with, you know, partner, blah, 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 and I just don't want it to get nasty. And every time you bring in an attorney in, they pull, you know, they remind you of the nastiness. And I really don't want to go that route. What would you say to people? I mean, I know you've heard this. I mean, you know, what would you say to those people? What would you say to them?
It's a lot cheaper when it's hypothetically nasty versus when it's really nasty. So I'll have couples come in, right, that the wife is making her business and they're, for whatever reason, doing it in both ownership name. And I'll say, okay, whose business is this really? Who's running it, right, between the couple? Sure. And what happens when you separate? Oh, we'll never separate. That's fine. What happens when you separate? Because I'm paid, right? You're paying me to go through all of the bad things that are going to happen so you think about them. And, you know, in your typical group of people coming together to form a company with no documentation, and I actually had this happen in the case. There were three friends from college who got together and put together a company. One of them was the financial guy, and he got murdered. He was murdered. Yeah. Big change in their business. But what happened there is his stock in the company was inherited by his sister. And there was nothing in no agreement that required the stock to be sold back to the company or gave the others the right to buy it. And now they have a one-third owner of the business who doesn't care about it more than where's my check every month. And there were some other things that happened as we delved into it. But that became very expensive to buy her out of the company because there was no planning for that kind of event. And when I meet with people who are going into business together, you know, I'll say, look, we have to have it now because I'd rather you set the rules while you like each other than when you don't. Because if the reason the person is quitting and leaving the company is they're retiring and they're going to go sit in Key West and drink margaritas, great, you can be more generous to that person. But you can't be less generous. You know going in what your upside can be. And, you know, if the person decides that they're going to Key West and they want their percentage and they're not really retired and you don't want to be, right, working so 50% of your effort is lining their pockets for doing nothing anymore, you need a way to get that person out too. So in that case, the person who abandoned the business gets whatever you guys agreed was fair in advance, and they get the minimum. And in the retirement where everyone's happy, maybe you negotiate something more generous. But it at least sets your expectations and gives you a way to handle some of the most common problems because those two examples of the Key West examples happen all the time in business, all the time.
You know, it's funny because I like what you share with regards to when everything is peaches and cream, it's peaches and cream. And the three partners, one of them got murdered. And, you know, here you have this person that comes into business that has no vested interest, like you said, other than where's my check? And so, you know, having those agreements, I mean, as hard as it may be to, I guess it's kind of like a prenuptial, as hard as it may be to do that, in the long run, it's very protective of everybody involved because, you know, at the end of the day, everybody will know what they stood for, and it's written and it's documented, and so things can transcend a lot smoother and keep that joy within the business that will not happen if you don't have that stuff in place. So thank you for sharing that. Now, I'm curious about just being an attorney. I have this, vision, dream, something, you know, goal. You know, I'm one of those kind of people. I want to do everything in life that I possibly think I want to do because you only live once. However, you know, I one time was debating about going to law school, and I became a I said, well, you know what, before I indulge in that, my kids were small, and let me try really just an aspect of law that I could be familiar with, which was becoming a certified legal nurse consultant. So I got to, you know, consult on cases. I got to be an expert witness. I got to go through, you know, files for both the plaintiff and the defense. And it was really, really interesting. But it did tell me that, you know, maybe, you know, because I'm such a type A personality perfectionist, that maybe going into law would not be a good thing for me at this time. But then, lo and behold, I have this kid of mine, my youngest, who, you know, she was going to be a neurosurgeon, and she went from being a neurosurgeon to she wanted to be an attorney. And so she, you know, finished her undergrad, and she's taking a year off before she really decides if she wants to go into debt to become an attorney, but she's done some things, and she's really brilliant at, you know, seeing both sides of every issue. But on a day-to-day basis, what is your day like with regards to being in business and being, you know, a business attorney and litigator? Because I know people want to know that, because that's very intriguing.
So my husband says I can't say I have an average day because it's not average.
What's that, right?
Right. So I have two types of days. So there are court days when I'm actually in court, and those are, frankly, easier. Because when you're in court, that's pretty much all you can focus on. My in-the-office day is essentially go, go, go. So all of the night beforehand, I will print out my day's calendar and mark out, okay, from this time window to this time window, I'm working on this case, or I've got these calls, because not only am I handling client matters, I'm dealing with a lot of the firm's admin. I'm writing for both the video series I have out, plus the book, plus the other stuff, plus the fiction. I'm managing a conference that takes place every February in Colorado Springs about the business side of being a writer. So all of those, you know, I start my battle plan for the day and break down how in my 10-hour day I'm going to use that time. And then the phone rings at 8:30 and that all changes. but at least I have a plan. And when whatever blew up goes back down, I go back to the plan. I also have some fairly amazing associates and staff who help keep me running and get things packaged up when I'm going out to speak at conferences and handle a lot of that administrative. So I've spent a lot of time and energy making sure I'm doing just the things that I have to do as opposed to the other distractions.
Now, how, you know, for me, me, the type A, you know, in control personality, and granted I'm the perfectionist, but, you know, I'm much better. I mean, I can wax and wane with whatever, but sometimes when I want to get something done and I'm extremely focused on it, that'll be the time when I get a curveball thrown at me and I either need to duck or swing and hit it out the park. But it can be very distractive and very, you know, a little stressful, although I know how to manage my stress. It can be a little stressful. Your day seems to, even though you may have had it planned out, you know, probably a week in advance, or and you know what it is, you look at it the day before, how do you handle the ability to be able to keep yourself in a joyful place when you get thrown that curveball that takes you off your game plan, what you had, you know, set and reviewed the day before that you figured that you were going to have today? How do you remain in a joyful place with regards to that?
Sometimes it's a struggle, and sometimes it's as little as putting back down the phone after that call and saying, I need a walk around the block. You can reset your headspace and go back to what the plan was. And be, you know, I'm a perfectionist in recovery.
I'm not going to admit that. I'm not going to admit that I'm in recovery.
Fair enough. And part of that is really having to fight against the natural instinct to do it all myself and delegate out to the people I know can do it. Right. So, you know, this new thing blew up and we need to respond to it. I've got 6 deadlines that no one else can take. Okay, I need to go and walk over to the associate's office and say, you now need to do this. And because I like keeping my hands in stuff, right, I have my people come back in and check in with me as to what the status is. So for me, if I have to chase everyone to say, I've given you this project, it's got a week turnaround, we're in day 3, where are you? That's stressful to me, So I, because I know who I am and how I work, I'll say, look, you have to tell me, you know, on day three where you are, I'm going to count on you, and you have to be, because proactive to come to me, because if it's day five and it's due, I don't want to be chasing you down. And it gets me even more annoyed when I chase you down and found out it went out 2 days ago and I'm still worried about it.
Right. So being able to be, I think what I'm taking from what you're saying is being over, first of all, you have the team set up behind you, and then being able to delegate to them appropriately and having them being accountable to you for deadlines or things that you're expecting to be done without having to chase the information helps you tremendously to stay in a joyful place with regards to all that you do.
Absolutely.
I love that. I mean, how many of us out there that run a business can actually say, for one, that we have the systems or the team behind us in place, for two, that we hold them accountable and have them check in with us, whether they're on target or on task or not, and three, being able to delegate. I mean, sometimes that's the hard thing for me, is to being able to delegate things and give it to my team, because, again, I'm the perfectionist, and, you know, I want to make sure it's right. But I do find that when I do let myself do that more, it is a bit of a release, especially when the person checks in with me and lets me know where they're at. It does feel like I'm in more of a state of bliss than in a state of stress. And it does help all aspects of my business to run a lot more efficiently and effectively, and keeps me in that state of mind where I do want to go to Key West and sip on Mai Tais and margaritas and put my feet up on that beach chair and watch the beautiful water roll in and out. I mean, it's beautiful. So if you guys out there listening and you're looking to take something away, here we have Nancy Green, who's this, you know, very highly successful business owner, business attorney, and litigator that, you know, shares her one of her ways of staying in a joyful place with regards to her business is being able to delegate. So if you have a problem with delegating, take it from Nancy. It really does help, and it really can make a difference in you staying in a joyful place with regards to running your business. Now, Nancy, I want to ask you, you know, with regards to just business, why is it important to be crystal clear on what your business will and won't do? Because I know sometimes we have visions of grandiose with our business, and we want to do everything and be all for everybody, but that's really not possible, and that can really set us up for failure in many, many, many ways. Can you share why it's so important to be crystal clear on what our business can and can't do, or should or shouldn't do?
Yeah, so for me, there are really three reasons behind knowing exactly what your business is doing. The first is a client relationship aspect, right? Because if, you know, we always wanted to say, yes, I can do that for you, because we want to serve those people. And there are things that you shouldn't be serving on. And I'll give you an example. I'll often get, as I do the business law request on trademarks, well, can you get my trademark? And I have to say, no, I don't. I can't do that. I can send you a list of people who, you know, you can work with. But that easy question for a business owner is actually a whole completely different discipline of the law.
Mm.
And it's specialized. So I don't want to take the time away from the core of my business to go track down and handle that one aspect of it. It's better for both the client and myself to take it out and let someone else handle that aspect. And that goes into the second reason, is more and more businesses are niching or specializing. And if you don't know what you will and won't do, you can't focus, right? Same thing, even though trademark is very closely related to business law, it's not what I want to focus on. I certainly don't want to focus on divorce matters or traffic matters. So I keep my focus narrow. I can make myself the, go-to person for the stuff I do, and I have to let the other go. And that's really the third reason, is when an opportunity crosses my desk, whether it's to go speak to this group or take on a new matter, if it's not within my focus, it becomes a really easy decision to pass on it. So if the conference wants me to speak on trademark, I'd love to bring value to people, but that's really not my area. These are opportunities I can talk to you about. So it takes that plate, because there's only so much we can do on any given day, year, month, and allows me to prioritize what I want on it. And I don't have that, if not, because you get those people without that focus, and they go, oh, well, I can make $500 over here, and I can make over here, and they're going crazy. Because they really don't know what they should be focused on. It's important to be clear on your vision.
Do you have any tips or suggestions to help people get more clear on their vision with regards to what they do and what they shouldn't do, even though they probably could do it, but what they should focus on? Like, for instance, you said, trademark is a part of business, but you tell people you're really better off served by utilizing a trademark attorney, because that's all they do, versus, you could probably do it, but, it's not what you do. So why give, why give a half effort in doing something because you could do it, but it's not what you do, versus giving it off to someone who that's all they do. Do you have any tips for helping people to fine tune or hone in or realize what they really, really, really should be doing?
Yes, absolutely. So I have two sort of guiding principles that I use for that. The first is, do I enjoy it? If it's not something that I think I'm going to enjoy doing, I know that's something I need to farm out. Like, I don't enjoy doing the bookkeeping, right? I'm going to farm that out. The second thing I look at, because I can, I'm completely capable of keeping my QuickBooks and handling all of that and making sure all those, but not only do I find it not fun, I need to look at my acquisition costs or my return on investment costs. So for doing the bookkeeping, right, that's a return on investment cost. If I'm going to sink my time into it, that means that's an hour a week at my billable rate I don't bill out, as opposed to paying someone $15, $20 an hour to do that work. Well, my billable rate's a bit more than $20 an hour. Mm-hmm. So my return on that hour is much better to hire someone than to do it myself. And then when it comes to these sort of adjacent areas of business where, could I stretch and grab over there? Maybe. I look really at that acquisition cost. So for me to educate myself enough on trademark, it's going to cost me a whole lot of time. I mean, I would like doing that. I think that area would be fun. So that hits the first checkbox. But now I've got only so many hours of a day that I need to split up between all the various work things I do and all the various family things I do. And do I want to invest another 10 hours of time a week in learning something new, even if it's related? Or, again, is that time, is that acquisition cost better spent somewhere else? And, I made the decision that it's better spent, getting home while it's still daylight and seeing my kids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Building relationships with trademark and patent attorneys who I know and can refer out to. That's a much better use of that time and that acquisition cost than, again, spending it. Because, it's kind of horrible, but all of our time has a monetary value to it. And, you know, if you're given $1 million in your lifetime to spend, right, 1 million hours of your lifetime to spend, and you got to choose what to spend them on. So I try very hard to spend them on the things that matter to me most, that are in my priorities most.
Love it.
Yeah, thanks. And where I don't need to do it, I don't need to do it. I've gotten very good in the last 5 years of saying this is not for me.
Love it. I just feel like this, you know, very rush of peace and calmness as you were talking, because I think sometimes we just lose focus on that and want to be off and do all for everyone and kind of, you know, lose our own sense of identity and purpose, and just, like you said, checking in with yourself. And like you said, your billable hours are a lot more than $20 an hour, so why would you spend your time doing your own bookkeeping when you can have someone do that, not worry about it, and do what you do that you love to do that is the best utilization of your time for what you're trying to accomplish in life. I think that's absolutely, absolutely beautiful. Now, I want to get back on to the business side and ask you, what issues should people be aware of, not only when there's like more than one business owner, but when they have more than one business? Because, you know, there's people out there that they have a couple of businesses, and they may be a couple of different businesses. What are some things that you can share with those out there that do this? For instance, you are an attorney, you have a business, but you also write. And even though people may not equate being an author or a writer as a business, it is a whole separate business entity. What are some things you can share with people with regards to what they should be aware of when they do have those couple things that they do that are their businesses?
You need to treat each business like it's your only business.
Mm.
And what I mean by that is, you know, I get a lot of people that come in and say, oh, well, I'm starting my consulting business, but my husband already has an LLC. Can't I just put it under his business? Well, yeah, technically, you can. But what then happens when you separate? what then happens when your business is going gangbusters and his is faltering? If you're under one umbrella, then all your money is going in to support that venture and that debt. So for me, my law practice is under one name and one corporation with my business partners, and my writing is under a different LLC, different businesses. My, you know, even when you're in similar businesses, so back before the crash, you'd see a lot of home builders, right? And they'd have the main company, but as they went in and built a subdivision, they'd have Forest Glen 1 LLC and Forest Glen 2 LLC. And the construction companies, the builders, were doing that so because it's a high-risk venture. So if they were able to sell out all of Forest Glen 1, great, they could take their profit there. But if Forest Glen 2 struggled and wasn't making money, they weren't throwing the good money from the side that was Forest Glen 1 to prop up the failing business, right? They were in a position to cut their losses on the business that wasn't working without capsizing the whole ship.
Mm.
So that's when you have multiple businesses, it's really seductive to say, well, I'll just do it under one LLC, it'll be one tax return. But there are a lot of really good reasons to pay the accountant the extra fee to do the second tax return and pay your state the fees to have the second company.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really that separability and survivability. And we touched a little bit earlier, when you have business partners, whether they're co-owners or whether you're teaming with their business, you have to document those agreements. Because you can, years later, be very surprised by what the other side thought the agreement was, by what a court thinks your agreement was, or I've gone into court cases where both sides performed, right? My client mm-hmm. paid for services, the other person gave it, and my client sued for negligence in the performance of the services, and the court said, sorry, but when you guys made that verbal agreement, you had two completely different things in mind. So even though one was performed and money changed hands, the court found there was no agreement. My client got the money back. He paid for the work to be done. Woo-hoo. But it was less than a tenth of what the damages were because Reliance had bought, an airplane that needed a whole lot of work. My client was a very sophisticated business owner. He had run his company for years, and again, he stepped out of his core line of business to expand and got snafu'd. But a lot of that was he didn't have a contract.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you very much. So you guys out there listening, make sure you dot your I's and cross your T's and make your S's look like S's and not look like 8's, because it will benefit you in the long run. Now, here's something that could be very stressful. Having clients, and we've all had these, that don't pay their bills, how can us as business owners who want to stay in a joyful place and have a joy-filled business make sure that our clients pay our bills?
Yeah, so there are generally two reasons, three maybe, why your clients aren't paying you. The first is you've made payment optional, and that's, again, you don't have an agreement, right? So this goes back to being super clear about what you're doing and not doing. Clients who are upset don't pay your bill. And clients get upset because they don't get what they thought they were going to get. And that may be through no fault of the business owners, right? Because, again, they have something else in mind. I had someone come and consult with me that they were a bookkeeper, and they had this one company that had two businesses. And they had run both businesses under the same QuickBooks account, and she was hired to separate the accounts. And she did that and handed the report in. She'd done a ton of work, was really proud of it, and the client essentially threw the work back in her face and said, what is this garbage? This isn't what I wanted. Right? Because the client wasn't real clear on what the client wanted, but he did know what he didn't want. So,
which he probably did not articulate to her.
Right. And in his mind, what he was going to get back is the QuickBooks file for the older company was going to have everything purged out and was going to be a clean start. And there was the new QuickBooks file for the new company. And what the bookkeeper did, because it was just too much of an effort, is she left the data in the old company but flagged it as the new company. So when the reports were run, it would show clearly that it should be taken out of this company's expense. But because her solution was completely viable, but it wasn't what the client expected, partially because he didn't articulate what he wanted, her fee didn't get paid. And worse, he canceled the contract for the year's worth of services with her. So being real super clear, and if you've got one of those jobs or services, especially service providers, where there's discretion involved, you want to specify really how you're going to use that discretion when you can, so that you're not just coming with an end product that's different than your client thought. The other way, and again, it's all in your contracting, you can have your client put credit cards on file and have them agree that you're going to get invoiced, and that they've got a certain amount of time to protest your bill, otherwise it's getting charged to their credit card. You can, if you work on a flat fee project basis, get the fee up front. you know, take a retainer in. So when I take a new matter for a client that I haven't dealt with before, I will have them give me a retainer. That's roughly what I estimate the task to be. Litigation's different. But what the task to be. So I've got that money up front.
Right.
But really, the biggest time you end up with disputes with your customers is because their expectations and yours are different.
Makes sense. I mean, okay, so here I'm going to throw something else because I've experienced this. What about when you drop a proposal, within the document of the proposal, it has all the legality stuff, you know, with regards to this is the cost, this is what's going to be done, initiation of work indicates acceptance of the proposal, you have agreement on the work that's going to be done, you have the company, corporation, whoever, they sign it, and you go ahead and do the work, and then lo and behold, you know, you invoice them and they still don't pay. What is a recourse for a business owner in regards to that? I've experienced that a couple of times. And, you know, of course, you know, I mean, it was years ago. I just kind of, you know, wrote it off, so to speak. But don't ever want to experience that again because, you know, even today when I look back on the company, they're still utilizing the technology that I installed for them. And it's a large, a major financial institution, okay? They're utilizing the technology that the company that I own installed for them today, but yet they still have not paid the bill. And, of course, you know, over the years, the person that was responsible for the project management and authorization, well, you know, they're no longer around. Mm-hmm. How can you protect yourself from something like that? Because, you know, when you put expenditures out there to do a good job for companies, and a lot of times these large companies can be bullies. You know, they really can be bullies. How do you protect yourself from, one, getting burned on that end, which, again, can be a tremendous amount of stress when you've, you know, put out large expenditures to do this job, and then on the back end you can't get paid?
So a lot of that is front-loading the problem. When you do, especially when you're working with a corporation, assume that the person you negotiate with will not be the person there during delivery.
Right, okay.
So the whole, hey, we agreed to this, yeah, I remember that, no problem. Assume that that's not going to happen.
Okay.
Have them sign your agreement rather than the other way around. Right, you want for your business a contract that protects your business. And when you sign your client's agreement, the client's agreement signs that protects them. The other, when you're delivering a product or installing, don't deliver until they pay you. So if you're installing a system, you should have a construction draw. So if I've got 100 computers I need to load the software on, when I've loaded 10, you pay me 10%. When I've loaded 25, I've got 25%. So it makes that that exposure less. Have in your contract an attorney's fee provision. So we follow the American rule for attorney's fees, which means that unless you have a written contract, there's some statutes that cover, but they mostly benefit employees. You're not going to get your legal fees back. So it sounds crazy, but a $50,000 bill, if you can't recover your attorney's fee, may be too costly to chase.
Right.
Because at that number, you're past every state small claims court and lower court. Right, so you want to be able to recover attorney's fees because that gives you a little bit of teeth as well. And police your AR. If you're net 15 and it's net 30, you should not be starting work for the next month. Your contract should say, if you are behind, I have the right to stop working. And you need to police that. So you need to have someone in the office say, hey, you know, the Smith account is trending 60 days past due, but they just called them on a whole bunch of work. Well, they don't get a whole bunch of work until they get the bill paid.
Gotcha.
So it's standing up, a little bit standing up for yourself. But it's having that out clause in the contract that says, I'm going to deliver 100 units on this schedule. They stop paying you at 50 units, and now they're screaming, well, I need my other 50 units. We've got a deadline. And great. Pay my bill, and I will get you back on track. But without
that's
that...
That's perfect.
But without a provision in that contract that says, you know, they're making as interim payments to you, and if they don't make the payments, you have the right to stop. You're stuck performing to hope they can pay for you on the end when they've already delivered and you now have no leverage other than going to court to sue them.
Love it. And because my next question was going to be, you know, what is an out clause and why is it so important to have? And I think you've covered that a little bit, but can you just articulate that one more time? Because, you know, in today's modern society, you know, you have still the traditional way of doing business where there's contracts and proposals and things of that nature going back and forth. But with the advent of online business, you know, a lot of online people doing online stuff where they, I don't think they necessarily have a contract or, you know, I'm going to think like healers and, you know, that kind of stuff out there. Why is it important? First of all, what is an out clause? And then again, why is it, again, so important to have that in no matter what kind of business you do?
Okay. Yeah. So an out clause, the way I'm using it, is any contract provision that lets you stop working with the customer, with your partner, anything that if the contract becomes unworkable for some reason, like we've all had clients that we've worked with, and after working them for a while, we'd rather, you know, bang our head against our desk than pick up the phone when they show up on the caller ID. you don't want to work with people like that if they make you miserable, because you're probably making them miserable too. And,
right.
And you're much better releasing that and releasing that work. But if you're assigned a year coaching agreement with them, and you
yeah, there you go.
On it, right? So you want a way to address sort of some of the normal things that come up in a business relationship that would make continuing it either unprofitable for you or unfun for you.
Mm-hmm.
And the longer that relationship's going to last, the more important these clauses are, right? So with your business partner where you might be in business, I mean, my firm, it will celebrate its 40th anniversary in 2018. So the three remaining original partners have been business partners for, at this point, 38 years together.
Wow.
So, right. Being able to negotiate those differences has been critical. But even a year contract, if you're grinding your teeth 2 months into it, it's too long. Like for my bookkeeper client, she gave him a price, and I've had it for editors too, that they gave price estimates based on a certain quantity of work to be done. When they got the deliverables from the client to now work on, it was much worse and much more work on their part. So they were essentially upside down. My editor friend who takes the first three chapters of your book, and he'll give you a price saying, assuming the rest of the book is in this quality, this is how many hours it will take me, and this is your net cost.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he, at the time, wasn't using a contract. So when the client delivered a fairly pristine first three chapters and a barely spell-checked 30 following chapters, they had a problem. Right? They had a problem. Because the client, right, the novelist is expecting all of the editing to be done for $1,500, and it's going to take $1,500 to do the next three chapters because
right.
They're so poor quality. And to be able to say, have in your contract, look, if you, client, deliver me something that's not consistent with the sample you gave me for this bid, I can charge you more, or we can walk away, is useful, right? And the same thing, I'm not going to deliver my product to you until you pay me.
Right.
But that's, I mean, that's really why you want to have an out clause, especially when there's information that the other side knows that you won't know until you've quoted and are under contract.
Wow. Thank you, Nancy, for sharing that, because, I mean, like I said, you just shared so much wisdom with us today with regards to how we can do things to really keep our business in a less stressed state and really stand and run our business filled with joy and be in a joyful state. The last question that I want to ask you is, what brings you joy?
So spending time on the farm with my boys, all three of them. My husband will grumble and I just called him a boy, but that's okay.
Yeah, no, I agree. They are still our boys. We get rid of our kids at birth, but we don't get rid of them. They be our boys forever.
They do. Especially during the summer, and we're kind of coming out of this, but we'll set a movie projector out on the farm and watch movies out by the pool, just kind of hanging out with them, and spending the time to play with the horses and just, get away from it all.
How many horses do you have?
So I have two. They live in my front yard.
I love, like I said in the beginning, I love animals, and I have this unique ability to, I wouldn't call myself an animal communicator, but I have this unique ability to communicate with animals, and they're compelled to, they come to me. It's just the most amazing thing. I have done this since I was a little kid. It's like we have this communication process that goes on, but I cannot really tell you what they said, but I know what they're saying. You know, it's kind of weird. I mean, wild animals, I've had deer just come up to me and literally, like, will eat out of my hand, and they're wild. Birds, fish. And it's funny, my kids have seen this. At first I used to say, I'm a Dr. Doolittle. And they're like, oh, you're crazy. And then they start witnessing it, and they're like, oh, my God, Mom, you got something here. And I'm like, yeah, it's what I like to do. And it helps me to stay grounded and at peace and communication and commune with nature, because it's so beautiful. And nature is so forgiving, and people are not always forgiving. So when I'm feeling I just go out and just be in nature. And it's amazing how, butterflies will fly around me, or birds will come and sing to me, or the deer will come up to me, or the cats or whatever. And it just really helps me to appreciate the goodness that we have in life that we so often take for granted. So, horses, I used to ride horses all the time when I was a kid, and then kind of got out of it because I moved and became an adult, right? But just seeing their beauty and seeing them run and, just seeing them is just really calming and grounding to me. So the fact that you have that and you're able to spend time and that's what brings you joy is absolutely beautiful and a wonderful way to close our show. But before we close, all of you out there listening, and you might want to say, hey, does Nancy work with people outside of her metropolitan area? And I think where are you, Nancy? Where are you located? In Alexandria, Virginia, right?
Yeah, I'm in Alexandria, Virginia. I'm Bard, D.C., Virginia, Maryland. I do a couple, as you can probably tell, a couple different things. So I do a lot of the legal work, but I do a lot of business consulting outside that metro area. So things like going in and making sure your policies are and procedures are in place, helping you decide when to scale up and how to transition, all of those things fall more under the consulting area. And those I definitely do outside the D.C. metro area.
Perfect. So someone listening that may not be in the D.C. metro area can connect with you with regards to business consulting. And how would someone connect with you if they wanted to? How would they do that?
So active social media. So my Facebook and LinkedIn names are both the same. They're Attorney Nancy Green, and Green has that sneaky little silent E on the end. You can email me at ngreen, G-R-E-E-N-E, at attorneynancygreen.com. And then my Twitter, because they didn't have enough room for attorney, is A-T-T-N-Y, Nancy Green. And you can reach me those ways.
Perfect. Well, you guys, there you have it. Another way that you can have less stress or no stress at all in your life when it comes to traveling down your path to bliss, particularly if you're a business owner, entrepreneur, or someone in a business and you have your partner or a key player, so to speak. Nancy has shared a tremendous amount of wisdom and information that people pay her lots of money to get, and you guys got it here today for free. If Nancy is someone that you want to connect with, contact, you have some issues with regards to your business, you want her to look at your stuff, to make sure your I's are dotted, your T's are crossed, and you don't fall into, you know, being a business owner and going out there and doing stuff, such as the example I gave with, you know, Mr. Stanley Burrell, a.k.a. MC Hammer, then I highly suggest that you connect with Nancy. And, again, you can connect with her at N Green with the silent E at the end at attorneynancygreen.com, or follow her on Facebook or Twitter. And you know, she's sharing words of wisdom all the time. And she's a very, very wonderful lady. I've met her in person, and she's fun, and she's pretty, and she's intelligent, and she's witty. But most importantly, you guys, she's knowledgeable, and she's filled with joy. And sometimes a profession that, you know, we often don't see a joy-filled person in. So there you have it, the wonderful, phenomenal, and joy-filled Nancy D. Green, attorney at law. And for all of you out there listening, I want to thank you for listening and tuning in. And again, thank you, Nancy, so much for being a guest on Blissful Living. It was a pleasure. I learned so much. I mean, you, like I said, you just the way you talk, you're so peaceful. You just brought peace to me as I'm listening to you talk about some really, really stressful things that, you know, can create havoc in our lives. And so thank you so much for agreeing to say yes and coming on the show. And I know that your words of wisdom will help so many people. And with that being said, all of you, again, thank you for your time. This is Rochelle Marie Lawson, the Queen of Feeling Fabulous, saying, as always, I'm wishing you peace to your mind, wellness to your body, and tranquility to your spirit. Until next time, have a phenomenal journey as you travel down your path to bliss, and goodbye for now.